Good morning, everyone. Welcome. It is FPC Radio Live, Wednesday, May the 10th. It's almost Mother's Day, folks, so make sure you got all that situated. I once forgot, John. And it only took until probably 10 years later where my mom accidentally forgot my birthday because she confused what day it actually was for me to ever live that down. So, yeah, a little fun fact about me. I once forgot Mother's Day. It's bad.
Can't do that.
No, I know. I felt bad. I did. I made it up, I think. I mean, I was...
Yes, you're a good son. I know that for a fact. You're a very, very good son. But you mentioned Mother's Day and May 10th. Today is the 53rd anniversary of Bobby Orr's flying goal to complete the four-game sweep of the St. Louis Blues to win the Stanley Cup for the Bruins in 1970. Unfortunately, the Bruins will not be playing on May 10th or on Mother's Day this year. And unless the Celtics get their act together, neither will they.
Well,
maybe the Bruins and Celtics can have a slow pitch softball game Sunday.
Well, look, game six. First of all, I was going to marvel in the fact that you must be reading my mind because, well, that's exactly where I was going. But then you brought me down with reminding me of the fact that the Bruins aren't playing right now. And that's certainly disappointing because, yeah. But yes, it is the anniversary of the Bobby Orr goal. And unfortunately, no, I was not alive. I was always asked, someone who was constantly asking me this question, but if there was like one sporting event that you weren't alive for, that you could like just go back and witness, I don't know if this would absolutely be it. I always said I wanted to go back and actually see Bobby Orr play, so maybe not in a broader sense. I'd like to see Bobby Orr play. The Miracle on Ice, I wasn't alive for. I think that would probably be at the, I'm more of the, I would have loved to witness that. I wasn't alive for that, for sure, the Miracle on Ice. I think that would be at the top of my list. But watching Bobby Orr play and specifically seeing that goal would be, would probably be there too. But
I'm old enough to remember all of that.
Oh, good.
In fact, the Bobby Orr goal, that's one of my first sports memories. The first team I fell in love with was the Boston Bruins, and my first sports hero was Bobby Orr. And I remember during those playoffs, my dad was friends with Johnny McKenzie, who played for the Bruins. They were like drinking buddies back then. You know, a construction foreman could drink with hockey players because they made about the same amount of money. But I would get tickets to go to the postseason. I saw a lot of those postseason games in 1970. I was only seven, and, you know, I'd fallen in love. And yeah, that was kind of like the first sports memory I had at 7 years old. I remember it was Mother's Day and just going out for ice cream afterwards, and like the Bruins won the cup, and then they won it 2 years later. I mean, look, he was a freak. Even when you watch highlights now, it looks like he came from a different era.
Mm-hmm.
Like a guy playing at today's speed, playing with a lot of slow guys back in 1970. That's how great he was. But yeah, that you would have enjoyed watching him, I'm sure. And yeah, the Miracle on Ice was just one of the most amazing stories because it was back before, obviously, Twitter and rapid news. And it was one of those things where you'd watch the news that night and they said, okay, the United States played the Soviet Union in a hockey game, and if you don't want to know the score, look away because we're going to show it on tape delay. And, you know, you try to not find out what happened and watch it on tape delay, and the rest is history. So, yeah, that was really just an amazing, amazing time.
Yeah, and look, I mean, obviously, you're going to be hard-pressed to find, you know, comparisons to, I guess, Bobby Orr in this day and age, because again, like you said, the game is faster and he was just a fast player in a game that was much slower. And that's something that again separated him from the rest and made him such a transcendent player. And then, you know, I did meet him once. HQ, right. Home headquarters. I don't know if that was a New England specific chain, but essentially it was Home Depot, you know, before Home Depot. Mm-hmm. You remember that place, right? Big green sign, HQ, kind of slanted.
Yep.
Kind of looked like the Enron sign, actually, now that I think about it.
That's not a good thing.
Yeah, no. Well, is HQ still open? Or I haven't seen one of those
not.
In a while.
Maybe Enron financed them, for all we know.
Hey, you never know. Go back and watch that documentary. But, yeah. Anyways, I met him once, and the only thing I had was my Cooper goalie stick that I got from Building 19 and a quarter or 3/8 or whatever the hell that was. Remember, you know, that store, is that still around?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, you can buy a lot of really good stuff there. Like, oh, that was the place to go for scatter rugs.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they had an incredible selection of scatter rugs.
I remember. Sheets.
Oh, yeah, incredible stuff.
I remember that. I mean, it's kind of like, for me, it's kind of like, you know, when you try to remember a dream and you only kind of get chunks and pieces of it, that's kind of what I'm getting in my mind when I'm trying to think of a Building 19. So I do remember, yeah, just big stacks of rugs, and I don't know, it was a weird place. But anyways.
How old were you when you met Bobby Orr?
Oh, oof. Anywhere between, all right, so it was a Cooper goalie stick, which means I was probably a mite, maybe first year squirt, so 9 or 10.
Okay.
So 96, 97, somewhere in that range. So
he's a class act. I never got the privilege to meet the guy, but he is as classy as they come, even to this day at 75 years old. And I still maintain he's the most popular Boston athlete ever. Because no one would say a bad word about him. Look, Tom Brady was incredibly successful, but some people kind of push back against Brady. He didn't feel like he was ever comfortable here. I don't think you'll see him ever again here unless he's going to the Patriots Hall of Fame. You know, Bobby Orr made his home here and now spends a lot of time on the Cape and also in Florida. But, you know, everybody loved him.
He's also a very much less assuming character. I mean, he's just, you know.
Yeah.
And look, you kind of mentioned it before, too. It's like these players back in the 70s, they weren't making much more than your regular blue collar workers. You know what I mean?
When the Bruins won that cup in 1970, Phil Esposito, who was one of the five best players in hockey at the time, was so relieved that he didn't have to work the summer to make ends meet because, you know, obviously by winning the Stanley Cup, they were getting the playoff share. And he's like, oh, for the first time, I don't have to go work on Dad's farm. And this is like one of the five best players in hockey. I mean, could you picture like Connor McDavid winning the cup this year and going, oh, that playoff share is going to come in so handy. I don't have to sell cars this offseason.
Well, and look, I mean, NHL player salaries are, the smallest relative still, you know, to the rest of the professional sports league. So you can only imagine what it was like in the 70s. But anyways, we got off on that little bit of a tangent, maybe because we were both subconsciously trying to forget the fact that, well, the Celtics are kind of right back where they were a year ago against Milwaukee, down 3-2. And
exactly same place.
Yeah.
Exact same place. Yeah.
And I don't know, John, does that fill you with some confidence or just sort of make you think that yesterday was, well, I know the Joe Mazzulla, I they're kind of making light of the comment of this is really their first like bad game that they played. And I know it sounds silly, but I kind of agree with them. Like they just weren't good from start to finish yesterday where like, I think in the past they've had spurts where they've played bad basketball, but they generally make up for it. And, you know, we talked about the first two losses in this game were ones that they really just gave away at the end. This one, they just lost. They just weren't good enough. I think, he was kind of right, although it doesn't really fill you with much confidence heading into Game 6.
Yeah, the other losses, you're right, Ian. The other two losses in this series were flip-of-coin games where James Harden stepped up and hit huge shots, right? And then you could comb through why didn't Joe Mazzulla take timeouts at the end of regulation and in overtime in Game 4, or why didn't he defend James Harden differently? One of the losses against Atlanta was what? Trae Young hitting a game-winning shot, a buzzer-beating winning shot with, you know, 4 or 5 seconds left. So those are games that you kind of lose sleep over and say, geez, if we just did one or two things differently, maybe you win. Last night was just a no-show. Like, who played well for the Celtics? I know Tatum had 36 points. He didn't show up in the first quarter. He was 11 of 27 from the floor. That's pathetic.
Yeah.
3 of 11 from 3. Jaylen Brown had 24 points. He was 3 of 8 from the free throw line. Al Horford didn't even score. I mean, Peyton Pritchard outscored Derek White and Al Horford, and he played, you know, in garbage time. It was a no-show. No one walked off that court last night with their head held high saying, yeah, we gave maximum effort tonight. It looks like it was a no-show. So that's the troubling part.
And I look, there's some, obviously, back and forth between Celtics fans going on right now between Jason Tatum's game. And look, it's like when you watch a game that is obviously officiated one-sided, but towards the end of the game, the officials kind of try to make it up so, like, the totals look closer than what it actually was. Does that make sense? So I'm not saying that Jason Tatum was like garbage time, but starting so slow puts you in a hole right from the get-go. And the Celtics just were never able to overcome that. And that's where it's like, yes, the sum total, 36 points, the stat line looked great, but you want to see that more balanced, I guess, across the board, not like a mad rush in the third quarter to try to make up ground, because, well, that takes away from what you're actually trying to do as a team, and that's control the pace. And what they're not doing is controlling anything right now. And yesterday, certainly they weren't, because they were playing from behind, partly because, like you said, Al Horford just couldn't score. Jason Tatum got off to another slow start. And, you know, I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me if they go out and win the next two games. Not at all. Not at all. But it's just concerning that we're seeing the same problems over and over and over again. And it's this inconsistency, but consistently problematic, if that makes sense.
I like that. You're starting to rhyme this morning.
Yeah, well, you know, I read a lot of Dr. Seuss as a kid, so maybe it's sitting in my subconscious.
Yeah, you got it there. Well, you know, the Jason Tatum game last night felt a little bit like a Dak Prescott game. Like, how many times have we seen Dak Prescott get down like 21-6 in the first half, and he threw an interception and three and outs, and he played terrible. In the second half, he throws for 306 yards. They end up losing by four, and at the end of the day, you go, wow, Dak Prescott threw for 400 yards. Well, if he played better in the first quarter, maybe you win the game instead of lose the game, right? So that's kind of what Jason Tatum was all about last night. And again, two straight games, Ian, where he's not there in the first quarter. Like, does he know what the start times are? Like, you know, it's going to be something.
And they
radical?
were fortunate
off the bench.
They were fortunate to make up that, you know, in game five, or I'm sorry, in game four. Exactly. Just obviously just couldn't close the door.
And it also felt like they had a hangover from game four. Like, look, the NBA is, you get blown out one game, you come back, win a close one two nights later. I mean, there aren't generally residual effects from game to game. Well, last night felt like there was. After game four, where everyone's questioning the coach, I think the players were questioning the coach, did they not have faith in Joe Mazzulla? And then he talked back his comments and saying, well, yeah, I should have used the timeout. Like, I'm sure that locker room is a bit confused at this point, and it's just carried over into game five. You don't generally see that in the NBA. The difference from last year that I see is that the Celtics came back, lost a really bad game five last year. They had a 14-point lead. They stumbled down the end. Then they went into Milwaukee, and Tatum had 46. And that, even that series, and they won game seven a couple of nights later. The difference between Milwaukee and Philadelphia, Milwaukee of last year, Philadelphia of this year, is that, okay, Giannis and Embiid, phenomenal players. Like, they kind of cross each other out. They didn't have Chris Middleton last year in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
James Harden's playing at a very high level. I thought he was sensational last night.
Mm-hmm.
He only took eight shots, had 17 points, but he had 10 assists, eight rebounds. He really controlled the game. Tyrese Maxey had 30 points, you know. So they're getting contribution from other guys, which I think makes them very, very dangerous.
Well, you saw right from the tip of the ball in the first quarter that Maxey was going to have a good night. It was just one of those like, oh, is this what we're going to see? And, you know, he was hitting threes. He was hitting contested layups and jump shot. You know, it was just everything was working for him. So, but that's the thing. That's why you can't have such slow starts. Like, why constantly put yourself in a position where you're playing from behind? Like, if they cut, you know, I'd understand Philadelphia coming out and coming out on fire in the first quarter. You know, maybe they're motivated from the overtime win from the win last in game four, all that stuff. But you can offset that by just going back and forth with them. The Celtics didn't put up a fight, and that really, again, just kind of dictated the whole game. So it's it's unfortunate that the Celtics got to put themselves in this position and really try to overcome these obstacles, but that's where they're at, and now you got to go win one on the road before you get a chance in Game 7. So,
you know what's scary about the Celtics? These last two years, I'll try to be grammatically correct here. 35 games, they're 11-6 on the road, 9-9 at home.
Yeah,
they're 7-9 at home their last 16 games, and that is one of the loudest buildings in the NBA. A great fan base. they couldn't even get the fans into the game last night. People will be critical of the fans. Well, it's kind of the job of the players to give the fans something they get excited about.
Exactly.
Like you said, from the very first play, the Celtics were like out of it. They got up 8-5, and then from that point on, it was just a bleep show for them. So blame the players, not the fans. And that's the troubling part of this, is that you would expect that, you're going to come out with a lot of energy. Game 5 is huge when it's 2-2. When it's tied 2-2, the winner of Game 5 goes on to win 82% of the time in the NBA. So, yeah, they're in a tough, tough predicament. I still think they're better than Philadelphia. But maybe we're getting to the point where we've overrated them a little bit and maybe taken Philadelphia for granted. Let's not forget, Philadelphia had the third-best record this year. They have an MVP in Joel Embiid. And they have a guy in James Harden who's won an MVP, has also led this league in scoring 3 times, and has also led this league in assists 3 times. This is a great player. And again, he's not always come up big in the postseason, but he has in this series. And then you talk about those other players like Maxey last night stepping up. Tobias Harris, I thought, was really good last night, 16 and 11. Devin House comes off the bench in 15 minutes, gives you 10 and 5. I mean, that's really good contribution. Again, I don't know which Celtic played well last night. And that's with Jason Tatum scoring 36 because he was so inefficient in the no-show in the first quarter. I'm not giving him a high grade for that.
Yeah, and again, that's what I'm saying. Like, it matters. Like, I'm not going to say some people are saying he was awful. Some people are defending, based on just the point total. And it's like, no, you can't just, especially in the first quarter. I mean, really, I know it's not the end of the game. And, we talk about it all the time. Like, you can overcome 15-point deficits, no problem. I mean, it happens all the time. But there is a pace, there is a tempo, and especially when you get deeper into series, I think it matters more, because at this point, each team knows what they are, they know how each other plays, and, I think confidence swings matter more. So Philadelphia comes out, and they're like, all right, well, we control this game, we're not going to give that up. Celtics got within 9, guess what happened? 18-point deficit by the end of the third quarter. Just doubled it, and it's like, okay, how are you supposed to win games like that? And the Celtics are constantly putting themselves in that position, and it's frustrating. So, we got some NFL schedule news though. That's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. We got some of the international games, which we always love the international series, the Patriots and the Colts in Deutschland. Huh? How about that? I took German in high school. I wish I remembered some of it, though. I really do, and I apologize, Frau Rubeski, if you're listening. I should have studied over the last 20 years, but high school was a long time ago. I don't have to tell you; you understand. But we do get some interesting matchups, including the Chiefs and the Bengals. This is an international game, but Chiefs and Bengals in Week 17. Now, I know what's happening here, John. The NFL is just crossing their fingers, praying, hoping, wishing, what have you, that this game is for the number one seed in the AFC, because that essentially gives them an additional playoff week.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. I mean, this should be a huge game. We both think they're the two best teams in the AFC, the two best quarterbacks. Look, they've met 4 times since Joe Burrow showed up, and every game has been sensational. Twice in the AFC Championship game. Every game is decided by a field goal. That's how close these teams are. And I think Cincinnati's one team that's not intimidated by Kansas City. I don't think Joe Burrow's intimidated by Kansas City or Patrick Mahomes. That's going to be maybe the game of the year. And if it does mean the number one seed, exactly right, Ian. That's another playoff game, because the winner gets a bye and the loser has to play somebody in wild card weekend.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, worst case scenario, both teams have their seeds wrapped up long before then, and neither team plays their starters, which would be an absolute disaster for the NFL. So they're really gambling on this one. But going back to the international games, you have the Falcons at Jaguars in London, Week 4. Jaguars, Bills at Bills. I say at with quotation point marks, hand quotes. London, Week 5. Ravens at Titans, Week 6 in London, and then you have the Dolphins at Chiefs, Week 9 in Germany, and then the Colts at Patriots, Week 10 in Germany. So, look, I mean, it's they're always fun. I kind of, I like the hype. The good thing for the NFL is to get more fans involved. I mean, there's nothing like getting the popularity of the sport brought it, make it worldwide and make it, interest over in Europe and all those other places. Obviously I'm not necessarily gung-ho about any sort of plans to put a team there permanently, or anything, you know what I mean? Like I like the novelty of it. I wonder if it'll eventually wear off once they realize maybe they've exhausted as much money. But then again, just putting on the event is going to make them a lot of money. So in that case, I don't think these international games are going anywhere anytime soon.
No, I mean, I would think the only place you could place a team outside the United States, maybe Mexico City, again, because you wouldn't be dealing with as difficult a travel schedule and time zone. And, of course, Canada. Yeah, I mean, I think Toronto, maybe, but then I think Buffalo would put up some sort of resistance against that because they've played some games in Toronto. Montreal, I don't know if they would support an NFL team, but yeah, Canada or Mexico makes the most sense. Because if you put one team in Europe, the travel issues would be
pretty big,
especially if you have to play in Seattle or, San Francisco on a road game. I mean, you'd have to give them a bye week either before or after that. So, yeah, that would be problematic. But, the schedule gets released tomorrow night. The Celtics playing Philadelphia tomorrow night and then a huge playoff game. The schedule release will outdraw the NBA, which is just mind-blowing, isn't it? I mean, 2-3 hours of just finding out who you're playing in 6 months outdraws game six of the Eastern Conference semifinals. That's how big the NFL is.
Yeah, and look, this is and that's the thing. It's like we know exactly what the NFL is doing to us, but we still go through it. That's how much of a hold it has, stranglehold it has on us. We know they're going to milk the bleep out of this schedule. And we're going to sit there and be like, come on, give it to me. I'll watch every second of it because, well, we're sick like that. But I was going to say, if there's a team over in Europe, but I can imagine, John, it would be quite a job for the assistant to the traveling secretary for all of these NFL teams, whoever that may or may not be. They might have just gotten
an
intern.
He'd have to hire a very good assistant like George did.
Yeah, exactly.
Very competent assistant. What was her name? I was talking about the other day with someone.
Oh, man.
I can't remember her name.
Oh, my God. What is it?
Boy, if we're both stumped, it's really good.
Wow, that's bad. I mean, when it comes to a Seinfeld reference, very popular actress, obviously. I don't know her name. She was on News Radio, one of my favorite shows. I love that show.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, that was... damn. Oh, you know what? What am I doing? It's 2023. I have a telephone in front of me. I can easily look this up. George's secretary.
A telephone, you call it? It's a cell phone, Ian.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not hip.
Do you have a rotary dial there, too, while you're at it? Yeah. You sound like my grandfather.
Well, I know you jumped at that opportunity to make me feel like the old one here.
Yes. I have an automobile sitting in the driveway.
Yeah. A motor vehicle.
Yeah.
Let's see.
This is the traveling secretary, and he hired this woman that they were attracted to each other.
Vicky Lewis,
got more money than George. Okay, yeah, okay. That's great.
Well, I just, now I'm trying to, now the pressure's on. Now I can't find it. I was hoping it was just going to pop up. Let's see. Hold on. Is it Ada?
That sounds right.
That kind of feels right. I think I saw, Secretary Ada. Okay, all right, that's what it was. I thought it was like some sort of old name. Sorry to any Adas out there that might be listening. I might have just classified you as just old, but...
Yes, half my graduating class was named Ada. Back when I didn't have electricity.
Shoe fits, you go churn your own butter and read by candlelight. I understand.
I'm not Amish. I mean, I'm Italian-American. There's a little bit of a difference there.
Yeah, but I was going to say, I'm starting to...
Who screamed out during sex? Was it George yelling out Ada or Ada yelling out Mr. Costanza? Yeah,
no, it was George giving her a raise. All right. With that said, we're going to end the show on our nonsensical rants about Seinfeld because we've truly gotten off topic, and we'll save the Hall of Fame debate that I was having on Twitter for another day. But quick thing to Kyle here says CFL baby, just go to my timeline. I'm giving Warren Moon some props, man. 5-time Grey Cup champion, so Hall of Fame quarterback.
Okay, with that, though, does Doug Flutie belong in the Pro Football Hall of Fame? He was probably the greatest quarterback in Canadian Football League history, maybe even as much as Warren Moon. But he didn't have much of an NFL career, I know that. But well, you know, does he get some props?
I think he does, but I mean, look, I'll be honest, I'd have to look at his career a little bit more. I don't have that in front of me, so I don't want to say definitively one way or the other. You know, Warren Moon was a successful NFL quarterback too, and I think that matters.
Oh yeah,
like
Oh god, yeah.
So I think that's a big deal, and obviously, I mean, five straight Grey Cups. Kyle says. Yeah, no, and that's something that I said to someone on Twitter today. It's like, it's not the NFL, it's the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Exactly. I just don't personally have everything in front of me to make a case for Doug Flutie. So I'm not saying one way or the other. I'm Switzerland right now. I'm being neutral. I am not choosing a side. I do not have the information in front of me, but I 100% agree if their career in the CFL warrants going into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, I'm all for it, because again, it's the Pro Football Hall of Fame, not the NFL Hall of Fame. So, but anyways, that's certainly a discussion. Well, yeah, no, that's a discussion because we only have a few minutes left, and I don't want to dig deep. You know, think about it here. Maybe I'll put a poll out, and we'll we'll approach it tomorrow. But the discussion was basically around guys like Eli Manning, which again, that's a discussion that we can have, and will take some time. Matt Ryan and Philip Rivers. And I think the whole thing started with someone listing five quarterbacks that will be going into the Hall of Fame. I think the other two were Rodgers and Mahomes. And I said, those are the only two of those five that are going into the Hall of Fame. So, you know, and I got some pushback, but I feel very strongly about that opinion. And I think that's a good discussion anyway. So, but we will save that. You know, we'll do that tomorrow. Let's do that for Thursday, because I don't know if we're going to have a whole hell of a lot to talk about tomorrow. Maybe the Lakers. Maybe we'll talk about the Lakers. We'll see. But either way, we'll have that discussion about the Hall of Fame quarterbacks. No doubt about it. So, yeah. Kyle's got, you know, again, if Kyle's got is ready with the Doug Flutie stuff, and I'll defer to him right now. So tomorrow I'll come back with a little bit more ammunition when it comes to Doug Flutie, and I'll give my definitive answer, which I trust Kyle, so I'm very sure I'm going to align with what he's thinking here. So, but thank you everyone for tuning in. We will be back tomorrow, and we will continue this discussion. Until then, have a great Wednesday, and we will see you then.